Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, so we can always find things and people worthy of praise, and St. Paul says we should think about these things. We should indeed, but we should also talk about them. That is exactly what we're going to do today on Call Me Catholic. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times. So we can wake up and say to the world, each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. Jimmy G is the man at the dials. He's my engineer and chief fact checker, Jimmy the G.
Every Saturday morning, we bring this studio alive.
Yeah. So yeah. Jimmy the G or Jimmy G? Jimmy the G sounds a little sinister.
Just Jimmy G.
I think Jimmy G sounds a little more affable. It's a holiday weekend, but we are working. We're coming to you live on this Memorial Weekend Saturday because we think you deserve it. Now, many of you are probably listening to us in your cars. Maybe you're heading off for a nice holiday weekend, an outing with your family. But if you happen to be listening to us at home or in your office and you're near a computer, well, you can watch us and listen to us. So what you do is you go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/callmecatholic. Marvelous Matt, our studio assistant, has put up a link right there, and you just click that link on, and it will take you to a live stream of our show. You can watch us broadcast the show from our studio here. We'd love the pleasure of your company. So please do join us. Check that out if you're able. If you're not, we'll still be coming to you through your ears.
It's a special kind of link, one that's spelled L-I-N-Q-U-E.
Oh, yeah, it's a French link then.
Right.
Oh, maybe. Hey, what you won't be able to see is that Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. This is the Diocese of Orange, and our Bishop Van and his three auxiliary bishops are all out on confirmation duty this weekend.
Mm.
As they have been for several weeks.
Wow.
It is confirmation season.
That's right.
And we're a big diocese. 62 parishes, 1.2 million Catholics, and at 40 years old, we're the fastest growing diocese in the country, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, at least that's my story, and we're sticking to it. And we want to wish all our confirmation candidates and those who have just been confirmed all the wonderful fruits of the Holy Spirit. Wear the armor of our great faith with confidence and humility, and stay strong. Now, speaking of strong, this Memorial Day weekend, when we're in the midst of all our celebrating with our families and friends, we must remember to honor the brave and the strong soldiers who gave their lives to defend ours and all the liberties we enjoy here in the United States of America. Memorial Day has a really historic, interesting legacy. It was originally called Decoration Day.
It
was born right after the Civil War. I mean, during the Civil War, we lost over 600,000 soldiers, which I think was like about 2% of our population. So it was a tragic loss, and the country was grieving, and women would go out and decorate the graves with the flowers just to console themselves and to honor the soldiers. And so then it just kind of became official that they do that every year, and it went from Decoration Day to Memorial Day, and that's what we're doing this weekend. So today, that's what we're going to do on Call Me Catholic, honor the people who put their lives on the line for us. That is a lot, and we owe them a lot. So whether they're living or deceased, we owe a huge debt of gratitude to these men and women who defend us in our local communities and in the world arena. Now, our guest today is a remarkable woman, a woman who risks her life every day to protect ours. Julissa Trapp is a homicide detective with the Anaheim Police Department, and she is going to share with us some of the behind-the-scene details about conducting a homicide investigation. Pretty gritty stuff. So how she remains anchored in her faith through some pretty tough details is a subject that I cannot wait to mine with her. So, and then take note, this involves you guys. In our Chatting with Catholics segment, I want to hear from you. Is your parish or your local Catholic cemetery doing anything special to commemorate Memorial Day in your community? We'll give you the number later, and you can call us and share that with us. But first up, it's our Call Me Catholic countdown. And this week, I'm going to go with our theme of honoring the good and the dead. And also, I'd like to recognize what I've researched to be the five most interesting and beautiful Catholic cemeteries in our country. Now, this was not an easy Call Me Catholic countdown because Catholic cemeteries aren't really big on social media. Information about them is kind of buried, if you will. So you have to do a real digging to find out where the interesting Catholic cemeteries were. I mean, I've visited a few, so I'm using a few of my own experiences. But other than that, this is just from what I've researched on the internet. Catholic cemeteries are such a beautiful extension of our church. They're really a bridge to our communion of saints. So if you have a Catholic cemetery in your community, you should visit it. It's a beautiful place of rest and peace and solace and forgiveness and healing. So I'm going to honor those Catholic cemeteries today and list five of them. So here we go. The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
No, it's not working this week, Jim. That is not the theme song for this category.
I should have dialed it down. Yeah. Oh, well.
We're going to get that choir of angels singing the Call Me Catholic Countdown.
They were going to send me a couple new versions. It hasn't happened yet.
All right.
So.
Okay. Well, it's a holiday weekend. We can't expect too much from our home office. Okay, so number five on my list of the most interesting and beautiful Catholic cemeteries in the country is going to be Calvary Cemetery in Los Angeles. Now, it was dedicated in 1896, and it's the oldest, it's one of the oldest cemeteries in Los Angeles. It sits on 136 acres of rolling sort of parkland just off of Whittier Boulevard. And what's really notable about this cemetery, and I have visited there several times, they have a beautiful Stations of the Cross that are all carved out of stone. And when you come up the main road to the cemetery, you know, you see these stations. Mm. And during Lent, there are regular Stations of the Cross services held there, and I think during the month of November as well. And then they also have an All Souls Chapel that is patterned after an old English kind of a rural parish church. And it's beautiful. It's Gothic, and it has, you know, gabled spires. So it's a beautiful cemetery there in Los Angeles, Calvary. So my number four, going to be an interesting theme here, is Calvary Cemetery in St. Louis, Missouri. Hmm. Now, this one was established in 1849 for sad reasons. I mean, cemeteries do have a certain amount of intrinsic sadness to them. But during the cholera epidemic, which took so many lives, especially in St. Louis, Missouri, they couldn't bury the dead fast enough. They were running out of space. And they thought if they buried the people, especially the disease victims, outside of the city limits, they might be able to stay the disease, which is certainly not. We've come to learn that's not true. But anyway, so the Archdiocese of St. Louis acquired this, like, almost 400 acres of farmland outside of the city. And it became a beautiful cemetery, and it still is today. Such notables as Tennessee Williams was buried there, which I think is, I didn't even know he was Catholic. Interesting, the playwright. And Dred Scott, the famous slave who unsuccessfully sued for his freedom, they're both buried there, and their tombstones are right there in Calvary Cemetery in St. Louis, Missouri. Okay, my number three cemetery that I'm going to acknowledge as a beautiful and interesting cemetery is called St. Raymond Cemetery, and it's in the Bronx. It's in the Bronx. So I think this is a beautiful landmark cemetery because of the sheer drama of its landscape. So it's 180 acres in this densely populated Bronx community, and it's just like tombstone after tombstone. Mm. So, you know, it doesn't have like rolling hill landscape, but it has this sort of interesting memorial landscape that's very cool.
I've often wondered if they run out of space. I mean,
real estate. Right. Well, that's why cremation is actually becoming a very popular trend in Catholic burials. But there are 4,000 burials a year there still at St. Raymond's. So they have space. Hmm. They still have space for you folks. And it's not filled to capacity. So it's one of the busiest cemeteries in the country.
Interesting.
The brother of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton is buried there, and jazz singer Billie Holiday buried there at St. Raymond. Okay, my number two beautiful Catholic cemetery is another Calvary. See, it's very obvious why they chose the name Calvary for a cemetery, but the top three are in my top five in my list are named Calvary. This is Mount Calvary Cemetery in Portland, Oregon. Now, I know a few things about this cemetery because my oldest son worked there for 2 years after college.
That's right.
He wanted to get into marketing, and he wanted to live in Portland, and he had 2 months to find a job, and this was a really fine job that was offered to him, and it taught him a lot about marketing, actually.
Interesting.
And it turns out that this is the most beautiful of the three cemeteries in the Archdiocese of Portland. It is absolutely stunning. You have views from all around the city. You can see the Columbia River. You can see the north, east, and west. And a lot of movies come and, you know, would shoot films there while he was working there. So, you know, interesting too. A lot of people kind of thought it was interesting that this young man wanting to get into marketing works at a cemetery, but he says that remains. And now he's an advertising executive, and it remains what he says to be the most interesting item on his resume. People will always say, tell me about the time you worked for the Catholic cemeteries. I mean, it's a very interesting place to work in different cultures. You meet so many different people, and you learn to deal with people in very, very difficult times of their life.
Exactly.
And he was well suited to that. Okay. Now, the number one most beautiful and interesting cemetery in the country, I'm going to go with, you got to go with New Orleans. You know, Mark Twain said New Orleans is the city of the dead, I think. But one of the oldest cemeteries in New Orleans is St. Louis number one. There's St. Louis number two. But St. Louis number one is located kind of near the French Quarter. It was actually built in the 18th century. It was established in the 18th century. That old.
Wow.
But, you know, cemeteries in New Orleans are just fascinating because of the geology of New Orleans. They can't really bury underground because of the swampland.
Oh.
So things would rise to the top, and you want a buried body to hold its place. So everyone is buried above ground. So you just, the most fascinating thing to see, you just kind of meander through these aisles of different monuments and different tombstones and life-size statues that, you know, atop people that are buried there. And, you know, at the beginning, there was no rhyme or reason. There was no mapping of where we're going to do this in different aisles. You know, today you see it's all looks, you know, Arlington Cemetery is so beautifully precise. Uh-huh. But this is just like all juxtaposed all over. So it's really a very cool place to visit. They have tours there and you can walk around. It's also considered a little bit dangerous. So you have to keep an eye on your back pocketbook when you're doing that. Okay. So those are my top five most beautiful, Catholic cemeteries. I bet you have some that you love that are very precious to you, beautiful just because of the experience or the loved ones that you have buried there. So you can share that with us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic. And you should know this too, that a lot of Catholic cemeteries offer free burial for our deceased veterans.
Hmm.
And if you are honorably discharged or you died in service, they will often offer you free burial. And that's not true in all the dioceses, but like in Pittsburgh, for example, I was reading. And that's a big deal, and it's very, very well deserved. Okay, homicide detective Julissa Trapp from the Anaheim Police Department is up next. And we're going to dig deep into this conversation about how she draws on her faith to tackle some of the toughest scenarios in law enforcement. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page. Join the family. You like us and we'll like you. We've got a terrific Memorial Day show for you. So stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, hello there, listeners. Welcome back to Call Me Catholic, our special Memorial Day edition. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, and I am so honored to introduce you to our guest today. Detective Julissa Trapp works in homicide for the Anaheim Police Department here in Orange County, California. She graduated from the Police Academy at the age of 21 and since then has worked as a school resources officer, a detective with the Domestic Violence and Child Abuse Unit, also a detective in the sex crimes as well as the gang unit, and for the last 7 years has worked in homicide. Detective Julissa Trapp, welcome to Call Me Catholic, I think.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
It's a great honor to have you here. Now, do you need to pat us down or anything?
You look a little shady, Peggy. I might need to.
No, Jimmy G is the one you need to keep your eye on.
Yes.
Hey, I don't mean to make light of what is an incredibly impressive, if a bit disturbing, work history. So when you were a little girl, Julissa, did you raise your hand and say, I want to grow up to be a police officer?
Actually, that's exactly what happened. I was given a sticker when I was 5 years old, and it said junior policeman on it. And I was just moved by this officer. He just looked like he was just this hero. And
well, he was.
He was, yes. And I went to school, and I told my kindergarten teacher that when I grew up, I wanted to be a policeman. She very, you know, gently and kindly told me, oh, sweetie, you want to be a policewoman? I said, no, I want to be a policeman.
That was the die right there. The die was cast right there, Julissa.
Yes. I think my Mexican and very traditional parents thought it was cute when I was little. And as I grew up and I progressed and I continued on that path, they started to get a little worried. But they're nothing but proud now. So
wow. Well, I mean, it is unique to go to at a very young age like that as a little girl to sort of discard the little princess dreams and say, I want to be a policeman. I mean, that was obviously a vocation that God sort of planted a seed in your heart right there. You had the instincts for it.
Yes, and I'm very grateful for it.
Did you ever go back and tell that kindergarten teacher that you did become a police person?
No, I wish I should probably look her up, but it's probably not very prudent for me to, you know, illegally use computer systems, but.
I think you know how to do that, though. Hey, so Detective Julissa Trapp, how difficult was it to get through the police academy? How many years is that?
It's actually just, it's a 6 months program.
Oh, 6 months.
But
okay.
It's short, but then we have.
But it's tough.
Very. It's mentally and physically challenging, especially when you're 5'3". And at that time, I weighed a whole, you know, buck 20.
But you must be really physically fit.
Yes. I mean, I had the benefit. I was a police explorer at Anaheim Police Department, and I became a police cadet. And so I knew what I was getting myself into, and I started to prepare. And, you know, I made sure I was running and doing my push-ups and that I could scale walls and climb ropes and everything that was going to be required of me to pass the police academy successfully. So,
do men and women have to fulfill the same requirements? Do they make any adjustments?
Nope, none at all.
Okay.
You climb the same walls, you climb the same rope, and you fight the same fights.
So when you entered the police department, did you have your sights set on homicide eventually? I know that's the elite. Isn't it? They call it the varsity team?
Yes, I would call it the varsity team. I think other units would probably disagree, but it's definitely requires a certain kind of dedication that no other unit requires. When they say that we literally work 48 hours straight, we do. Mm-hmm. And no other unit is required to do that.
Do you have to kind of, I mean, these other things you did, working in the schools and working in sex crimes, domestic violence, child abuse, are those all stepping stones to eventually ending up in homicide?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I always had a dream of being a homicide detective, but it wasn't solidified until I was actually working a patrol call, and I received a call of a woman that was buried in Anaheim, on the east end of Anaheim, and only a part of her limb was sticking out. And I remember looking at her, and I remember seeing the varsity squad show up, and they're all in their suits and their ties, and I just remember thinking, what a tremendous task they had ahead of them. To figure out how did this poor girl end up there and what happened to her. And I knew then that's what I wanted to do. And there was a lieutenant there at the police department who had worked homicide and been in charge of it. And I made sure that I got his input. And he said, if you want to work homicide, you need to work the precursors, which is sex crimes, domestic violence, and gangs. He says, you got to work one of them. I took that very literally. I worked all three.
Yeah. And which one of those was the toughest?
Sex crimes.
Sex crimes, I would imagine, yeah. So, Detective Julissa Trapp, and by the way, listeners, if you'd like to jump into our conversation, I'll share a little bit of it with you because I have so many questions I want to ask her, but you can give us a call at 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. So, Julissa, you recently solved an unusually grisly serial murder crime, and you were really instrumental in bringing the duo of serial murderers to justice. Can you share with our listeners what you can about that story? Because it is fascinating, and it took an awful lot of courage and determination on your part.
Yes. I mean, it was an amazing amount of work by a lot of law enforcement professionals. I definitely, when you work homicide, you work it as a team, and I definitely could not have done it alone. There was at least 75 law enforcement officers from throughout the county that helped on the investigation. It is funny how things work. That case was not supposed to be mine. I still remember arriving at the scene and seeing this poor girl, Jeray, on a conveyor belt at a trash facility and thinking, who does this to somebody? I see a lot of horrible things and a lot of tragic things that, you know, one human does to another. But I think to see her there amongst trash was especially disturbing. And it just kind of happened to work out that maybe God had a plan. That detective that initially was supposed to handle the case had to go on vacation, so the case got reassigned. And what turned out to be one victim ended up being five. And
how did you determine that it was five? How did you link all the victims?
So originally, we were working just Jeray's murder. And I knew that there were missing women in the city of Santa Ana because I had read the paper, and obviously I talked to other colleagues from other cities. And when we were working her murder, I kind of had that in the back of my head that these could possibly be related. The women, unfortunately, were working as prostitutes. All of them were. And there was three missing in Santa Ana. And then I had found Jeray, and I knew that she, unfortunately, was in that line of work. And once we finished kind of determining where she had come from. You know, we're police officers. We start backtracking. That's what we do. We slowly start putting puzzle pieces together. We were able to determine, based on her cell phone, where she had last been when she was alive or when she disappeared. And we kind of slowly started working the trash. We collected numerous pieces of trash from the conveyor belt.
How do you steel yourself for that kind of work? I mean, that is so grim to go into the trash looking for bodies.
Well, luckily for me, I have an amazing partner. His name is Bruce Lynn. He's now retired. And
he does the dumpster diving?
He did the dumpster diving for me. And, you know, one of the great things about Anaheim PD in that we truly do work cases as a team. And when you're the lead, you know, sometimes you dish out some of the dirty jobs to your partners, and they put just as much effort on your cases as if it was their own. Mm-hmm. And so he jumped on that conveyor belt and slowly started collecting any piece of mail that had an address on it, anything that had a flat surface so we could fingerprint it. And we got lucky. We got a print hit on a caulking tube that ultimately led us to the location where we knew she had been disposed of. We found the trash can where she had been placed. And then one of my other partners had an amazing idea. He says, hey, why don't we run offenders that have GPS bracelets on? Maybe we'll get lucky. And I still remember thinking, like, who would kill somebody wearing a GPS bracelet?
Yeah.
Apparently two people. So we ran the GPS coordinates, and lo and behold, we found out that Stephen Gordon and Frank Cano had not only been responsible for killing Jeray, but
they collaborated.
They worked together. Uh-huh. They were a very efficient hunting, killing duo. And they got progressively better as they did more. And that's how we were able to link them to the girls in Santa Ana. And when we eventually arrested them, Stephen Gordon decided to talk. We had a 13-hour conversation that I will probably never get out of my head, where, you know, I heard some things that nobody should hear. But part of that was that he did tell me that I was missing a girl, and that kind of became my second case, which was to find out who she was. And luckily, earlier this year, we were able to give her a name.
Fifth victim.
She was.
Wow. So when you are doing these cases, I was reading an article in the paper about it, and I loved a specific detail that they brought in, that they included in all the secular press, about how your faith came into part of your guidance and inspiration for finding the bringing justice for the victims.
Yes.
Can you share that with our listeners?
Yes, it was actually this case, I guess, that kind of exposed something that I do for all my victims.
A beautiful practice.
Yes. It actually started when I had my second victim, and I was working a very difficult case, and I was just kind of stuck. I had run out of leads. I didn't know what to do. And I think sometimes when we work these cases, you know, they kind of consume you, and I needed kind of something to kind of calm my mind. And I decided to pick up a rosary for him, and you know, there's a tranquility with meditating on God's life when you're praying the rosary. And it helped calm my mind, and it kind of helped me see things from a different perspective. And I decided at that point, like, I'm going to do these for each of my victims. And, you know, what I'll do is when I have a homicide victim, I'll pick a rosary that's unique to them, you know, whether it's their favorite color or if it's near a saint that we're celebrating during that time. And then I'll use it. I'll pray, you know, immediately after their death. I'll pray on their birthday, on the anniversary of their death. And then I eventually give it to the family. And it's been kind of a private thing that I did, but
well, I can see that. It's nothing you do to grandstand, but it is a beautiful detail that I think, especially being a police officer, Julissa, people need to hear these things. You are people with heart, and your generosity of service, I mean, listening to what you're doing to protect us and to bring justice to the killers is so important, and you do it with so much conscience and depth. And so I think it's a beautiful detail, and I know it was kind of a violation of your privacy, but I love the fact that the press was not shy about putting that in. Every story I read mentioned your practice with the rosary.
I was pleased, and at the beginning I wasn't particularly open to discussing it, only because it is a private thing that I do for the families. But when I give the rosary away when I feel I no longer need it and I need to, you know, like, mm-hmm. I tell the family, like,
that they need it now.
They do.
Yeah.
And, you know, their loved one has helped me all they can, and it's time to let them go. And when I gave it to Duray's mother, she walked out wearing it, and there was press there.
Beautiful.
And she kind of...
And there's connection, because you've never met the victim. We have the privilege today of talking with Detective Julissa Trapp, who works homicide for the Anaheim Police Department. She's an amazing example of the men and women who go into the trenches for us. Now, if you have any questions or comments for Detective Trapp, I know she will field them. The number is 714-282-6034. That is 714-282-6034. I have lots more questions, but I'll share it with you. Stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, this is Bishop Robert Baker from the Diocese of Birmingham in Alabama.
I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
Hello, friends. This is Father Wade Menezes of the Fathers of Mercy. Thanks for listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, happy Memorial Day weekend, my friends. I am Peggy Normandin. I'm so glad you've tuned in to Call Me Catholic today, because we have a really distinguished guest with us. Detective Julissa Trapp works homicide for the Anaheim Police Department, incredibly respected by her peers for her work ethic and her uncanny instincts. Detective Trapp, though, is not afraid to keep prayer in her arsenal of tools in this gritty line of work. Detective Julissa Trapp, thanks for staying with us through the conversation. I know nobody wanted to let you go yet.
Well, thank you.
I have too much to cover. I love the rosary story that you shared with us earlier, how you buy a pair of rosary beads at the beginning of a case, you pray for guidance, and then gift the rosary to the victim's family. Have the rosaries always been well received?
Yes, even if a family isn't Catholic, I think it brings them comfort to know that their loved one has never been forgotten, because some cases take me a little longer to solve than others.
Yeah.
And so I think when I actually give it to them, it definitely brings them comfort to know that their loved one was very present in my mind and in my thought.
Yeah, and as a devotional, it puts Mary right there in their family and in their presence
and
in their home.
That's one of the reasons why the rosary is important to me, because, you know, she lost a son. And, you know, one of the hardest things being a homicide detective is given a death notification. And it, regardless of who the person is that's lying on the ground that has passed and what kind of activities they may have been into, all the mothers cry the same. And the sorrow and the pain is the same. It's across the board, and it's definitely something that you never get used to.
No, I would imagine not. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. This is just such a beautiful testimonial of faith in the line of police work. It's just exquisite. Julissa, do you notice faith among police officers in general, or is this something that they kind of hide behind their uniform?
No, I think... I mean, I'm generalizing, but I think the majority of us are very faith-based. And, you know, if you look around, there's, you know, St. Michael is ever present in, you know, lockers and, you know, in our offices. And one of my best friends that is a police officer recently had a scary moment, and he was very shaken up by it. And, you know, I think with just the current times, you know, people targeting police officers, he was kind of reflecting on it. He has children. And I remember I had received a gift. It was a St. Michael
medal
that had come from the Vatican, was blessed by the Pope. And I said, open up your uniform, because he's working patrol. He's a sergeant now. And I took it off mine, put it on his vest, and I said, you're going to be okay. And it was like you could immediately see he was just like, he took a deep breath and he says, I'm going to be okay.
Wow.
And was he?
He is.
Oh, that's beautiful. Julissa, what has been one of your scariest moments in law enforcement?
I mean, we all experience moments where we reflect back and go, wow, that was pretty close. You know, we have a lot of mentally ill and homeless people in Anaheim, and, you know, dealing with them and their illness can be, you know, trying at times, because, you know, they're behaving violently, and sometimes it's hard to connect with them and make them understand, you know, that we're there to help. But I think for me right now, currently as a homicide detective, it's not that I'm scared of what happened, but I'm scared of what could happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my boss and I talk about it all the time, how it keeps getting closer and closer. And I don't want to work the most horrible case I know I'll ever have to work, and that would be the death of a police officer. Mm-hmm. But I know that I have to be prepared for it in case it does happen. And, it keeps getting closer and closer. It's surrounding us with the two deputies in Compton that just got shot this week. And I fear that.
So you fear for your life. Yeah, that is very interesting. What would you like the public to know about police officers that you think they don't understand, that they don't get?
You know, it's easy to say, but it is the truth that we're human. We have feelings. We make mistakes. And when you come in contact with a law enforcement officer, you never know what they just came from. They could have just come from a call where they had to give CPR to a baby mm-hmm. and the baby passed. And they're trying to process that. And there really is no time for us to reflect. You know, it's on to the next call. And the next call might be somebody who's had their garden hose, you know, stolen. Mm-hmm. And you just came from this tragic event. And so I think people forget sometimes that we're not robots, that we're not machines, that we are human and we do feel. And sometimes we have bad days and good days.
Yeah. But you are putting it all on the line for us. Hey, we have a caller from Maine. Joanne from Maine is joining our conversation. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you, Peggy. I had the honor and pleasure of meeting you on Ash Wednesday for a wonderful tour of EWTN.
Oh, yes. You're one of our ambassadors.
Yes. And I am highly respecting Detective Trask and her work. I come from a law enforcement family. My dad was a Boston police officer who was actually killed in the line of duty. And my brother and my godfather were also BPD. So I understand what it's like every day. You never know what you're going to face. You are seeing the worst in people at times and situations, and you can become very jaded over time. So mm-hmm. I'm very impressed with your work and the fact that you're able to weave your Catholic faith into your everyday interactions with the people you meet. My dad's middle name is Michael, and I understand the power of St. Michael. I understand the soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan are sporting St. Michael badges on their flap jackets.
Protect us in our battles.
That's right. So thank you both for being there, and thank you for sharing this story.
Thanks.
And please continue protection in your work. I formerly lived in San Diego for more than 20 years, and I know it's a difficult situation that you face every day.
God bless you, Joanne. Thank you for sharing that, and God rest the souls of your departed.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You know, it is ironic, Julissa, that a recent story that I found completely ironic was that the police were protecting this rioting group that was demonstrating against the police in their area. And that to me was the ultimate sort of irony. Here they are. They're protecting your right to object to them. So.
Yes. You know, with our city, we've had our fair share of, public disturbance, and I wouldn't call it riots, but, we've had some unruly groups, and, regardless of where you work in the police department, when something like that happens, we get in uniform, we put on our riot helmet and, go and stand on the line. And, I do sometimes find it ironic. I had a teenager and she was screaming in my face and she was talking about how, the police discriminate against Mexicans. And I'm like, and I realized my last name is Trap on my uniform, but I'm like, does she not see me? I mean... No, we don't. And our police department is so diverse, and we have plenty of, our chief is Mexican and a Spanish speaker and very, proud of his ethnic background. So,
well, yeah, Jim, did you have something?
Well, I can well imagine there are folks, there is that element out there who think that police are the enemy.
Until they need them.
They have that mindset. Yeah.
It's actually very unfortunate. We had a little civil disturbance at our city hall back in 2012. And there was a gentleman that had brought his wife and his kids to this demonstration. And he was saying some things that were not very nice. And his daughter would peek out and look at me. And at one point she smiled and she waved and she got in trouble by her father. And I thought, what are you teaching this poor girl?
Wow.
I'm supposed to be here to help her.
But you know what? You were teaching her, because obviously everything about your body language and your presence and your language and your form of communication signaled to that girl that you were friendly and you were a friend. You were one of the good guys. Like, you perceived that policeman in your youth, a hero.
Yes, that's why I think it's so important for us to be involved with the youth of our city. I miss our DARE program, but we do have law enforcement presence in the schools, and I'm proof that it works.
Yeah, and you did work in the schools for a while.
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Julissa, if you were to ask me, I would say one of the scariest things that you have described was your 13-hour interrogation of the murder suspect. At that point, he was a suspect. What do you do for 13 hours? How does that script play out?
You know, the theme might be different for depending on who I'm talking to, but the overall main part of the interview, and I spent a good amount of time at the beginning just building rapport. When you think about, I'm asking this individual, I need you to tell me what you did to four women, and then I found out five. He did horrible things to these women. And how do you get someone to do that? Well, who do you tell your deepest, darkest secrets to? Your best friend. Mm-hmm. And so I really focus on, you know, trying as best I can to build that rapport and that trust so that they feel comfortable speaking with me.
But isn't that so utterly counterintuitive?
It is. And, you know, every hair my body just wants to scream. And, you know, here I am sharing meals with this individual, joking with him, you know, and I later tell my, you know, my families when they watch these interviews, what you're seeing is something that we as officers do to elicit information, you know, so I don't really feel this way. And I do share things that are personal because I feel that makes me open to them.
Yeah, builds a certain intimacy of exchange.
Right. So I'm not a detective that uses lies or tells stories that aren't true, because I think that if you get caught in that, it's going to definitely be counteractive on what you're trying to do. So sometimes I do have to expose some personal things, but in the end, you know, I'm doing it for what's needed for the case.
I didn't want to play the gender card here, but I am fascinated to think that here's this guy having a conversation with you. Do you think that you are perceived at the beginning ever as a pushover, or like, well, she's just a woman. I don't have to fear her. I'm not worried about her ability to arrest me.
Oh, absolutely. One, I think it's easier for men to talk to women anyways, but Gordon did tell...
That's interesting. That is very interesting, yeah.
Gordon did tell Keith Morrison during his Dateline interview that he had played me. And I thought that was hilarious. I said, well, you confessed to five murders, so I don't know who played who.
Who's in jail? Wow.
But that was, that's his way of coping with what has happened to him.
Well, that's that total narcissistic state of mind, too, that it's all revolves around me.
Oh, absolutely. I was in shock when the DA had joked with me, and he says, you know, Steve Gordon has two friends left on this earth, myself and you, and we're both trying to put him away and put him to death. And I said, yes, that's true. And he goes, I won't be surprised if he writes from you from death row. And I kind of chuckled, and I said, ha ha, yeah, okay, right. He's written me from death row.
Has he really?
What
does he say? I mean, are they terms of endearment, or are they kind of angry terms, or?
No, very polite. Says he wishes he would have met me under different circumstances.
I'm sorry to laugh. That's so
I know.
Odd.
I know. It's just this train of thought is just so ridiculous.
Yeah. Hey, just to take a quick detour, Julissa, do you ever watch EWTN on TV? Or I know in your very, very rare spare time.
I've seen it on Facebook, yes.
Okay. Well, and we are also on radio. Well, there are so many ways to see and hear EWTN. A lot of times people think it's very inaccessible. You know, you have to have a very special cable channel provider to do this. Lots of people say to me, I don't get EWTN with my server. Well, Amazon Fire TV is a device. It's not a service that allows you to instantly stream EWTN to your TV. To get EWTN on your Amazon Fire TV, all you need to do is have a high-speed internet connection. You need a TV, and then you need the Amazon Fire TV player. The Amazon Fire TV connects directly to your TV. It's a little plug, and it goes right into your internet router, and it's just a super small device. You can change it from TV to TV, and you can purchase it at electronic stores. You can purchase it at Amazon.com. There's no fee for the service. You have to pay a fee for the device, but not a fee for the service. It's free. You just pay your internet bill. You don't even need a computer. You see, EWTN is everywhere, just as Mother Angelica intended it. So check that out. It is Amazon Fire TV. That's the product that we're selling on it. We're promoting today. On
it's all
EWTN.
About making EWTN accessible to everyone.
It is accessible to everybody. We have news. We have entertainment. We have great theology lessons and great discussions.
So, amen.
And speaking of great discussions, let's get back to this one. So I heard we're speaking with Detective Julissa Trapp from the Homicide Division of the Anaheim Police Department. And I want to just do a shout out for Anaheim, by the way, because Anaheim works really hard at trying to reach the disenfranchised. I know that the police department actually goes out and tries to place the homeless in homeless shelters and get them food. I saw a wonderful newsreel on that. I think they're very proactive with the.
We are. And, you know, our motto is, you know, community, teamwork, and excellence. And we strive every day to meet that, whether it's, you know, helping a bipolar schizophrenic get to a place where he can have a comfortable shelter and hopefully get his medication. One of the things that we do in homicide, too, is after we've had a homicide in a particular area, we make sure that we go out within the week and reach out to the community and offer any services that they may need, yeah. Understanding that not only is the immediate family affected, but so is the community around
yes,
them.
Right, absolutely. So, Detective Julissa Trapp, and by the way, if you'd like to jump into the conversation, we have a few lines open, 714-282-6034. I know Detective Trapp would be happy to field any of your comments or questions. In your work in the police crime investigation and police work in general, have you seen any disturbing trends in crimes, or is there pretty much nothing new under the sun?
I would say that the one that's probably most disturbing right now is the fact that, you know, more officers are getting shot and getting killed. And, you know, when I first started, I think the general thing with crooks was to run away from us. And now, you know, it's not that way. Now they actively seek to, you know, come after us and, you know, hurt us, which, you know, is definitely disturbing. You know, dealing with the homeless is definitely something that's affecting our community greatly. Because you have somebody that, you know, isn't in their right state of mind and they're often, you know, violent, and we're having to, you know, take them into custody, whether it's to take them to a hospital or to take them to jail because they've done something. And just because it's hard to get them to calm down, that sometimes we have to use force. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that force, unfortunately, leads to, you know, it being played in the media and people don't understand that. Mm-hmm. These individuals, you know, you can't reason with them.
What prepares you to make those kinds of quick assessments? I mean, do you go through your life every day when you're not working, even just sort of looking at people thinking, what would their tendency be? Are they packing something? I mean, do you sort of size up the world around you like this?
You really do. It's one of those things that unfortunately just kind of comes with the job. You know, when we go to restaurants, I rarely sit with my back to a door. You know, I'm constantly aware of my surroundings. What are the exits? I think all police officers do that just because we never know when something's going to happen.
And you are married to a police officer.
I am.
A lieutenant, actually.
Yes.
But
yes.
He has a desk job.
Yes. He jokes that he lives.
He sends you out for the dirty work.
He lives vicariously through me, yes.
Did he ever work homicide? So can he identify with what you're doing?
He wanted to, but unfortunately he didn't make the cut. So he definitely has to live vicariously.
Ever use that as a little bit of leverage in your marriage?
You know, it's funny. People think that because I'm married to a lieutenant who works at the same department that he would be much more understanding. But when the phone rings, I call it the bat phone. When the bat phone rings, he still to this day asks, when are you coming home?
Oh.
And I'm like,
He's worried.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I could come home in 20 hours or it could be 3 days.
Yeah. No, I mean, that comes from as much as you're always thinking about the job, he's just always thinking, is she still alive? Is she okay? So I'm sure, golly, that's just beautiful. Do you have any children?
I have a stepdaughter.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, I wasn't blessed with any children, but, you know, I think that was part of God's plan.
You're able to give so much more to the job this way, I think.
Yes, there is definitely no way I could have worked homicide with the passion and dedication I do if I had a little one at home that was waiting for me.
Oh, yeah. And you would just be so vulnerable. Tell me, what makes a really good day on the job for you, Julissa?
Well, it sounds a little morbid to say this, but, you know, when people ask me, you know, how long are you going to work homicide? And I say, when the bat phone rings, if I dread the call, it's time for me to move on. And, you know, mm-hmm. for us, I mean, that's what we do. It is a puzzle.
Well, it's a grace you've been given.
Yes. And so and it's definitely a challenge. But I think the best day is always sentencing day when you hear the judge and his clerk say, you know, that the defendant is guilty and is going to be held accountable for their loved one, you know, that's been killed. And
well done, good and faithful servant.
Yes.
Hey, we have another caller, Kristen from Alexandria, Virginia, who's listening to us on WMET Catholic Radio. Welcome to Call Me Catholic, Kristen. How are you today?
Hi, it's Kirsten, and thank you very much.
Kirsten, sorry.
Yes. How are you, Detective, as a Christian and as a woman, able to gain the respect of your male colleagues who may think that it's a man's profession, law enforcement, that women somehow don't belong there?
It's actually funny you say that. I think that maybe I've just been very lucky and fortunate that I came into the profession at this time. I know that there were several female officers that came before me that kind of had to endure a lot of the hardship that came with that. My partner that just retired, I was the first female partner he ever had to work with. Mm-hmm. And when he retired, he very kindly told me that I was one of the best partners he ever had. So I don't really get, you know, mistreatment or really treated any differently. Of course, they all joke that I'm half dude.
yeah, but you
so
know what,
that
Kirsten,
might help.
Kirsten, here's what you're not seeing. She is a thoroughly beautiful, feminine woman that has no masculinity about her. I mean, she's all woman, and she has a delicate, gentle way about her, too. So it would be a good question, but I think these men are charmed by her, too. And she's got a lot of smarts.
And, you know, they've come to really kind of embrace. They call me the crazy Catholic in the office, and they've embraced
that. You wear that brand well.
And now when they have difficult times solving their case, they'll go like, hey, Jules, can you light one of the candles for my victims? Aww. I said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I will pray for them and light a candle for you, too. So
that's the most powerful form of evangelization. What do you think, Kirsten? You wouldn't mess with this woman, huh?
I wouldn't. No, I really respect that. And thank you for your service to your community and to our country.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Kirsten. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people are probably, as they're listening to you, if they're not watching us on live stream, they might be picturing Marissa Hargitay, you know, from Law & Order, the lead detective from Law & Order. And you are every bit the woman that Marissa Hargitay is. But let me ask you something. How well do these television actors portray the life of a female homicide detective?
You know, I think some of them do better than others. I do watch them. I was in love with a show called The Closer, and it, you know, focused on a female character. She was, you know, solving homicide cases, and, you know, she was a little neurotic, and she had her little customs, and I look at her and I go, yeah, that's kind of what I do. You know, we're a little superstitious, and we all have our certain things that we have to do that mm-hmm. I think make us feel like if I do it the same way every single time, it'll work out better the next time. So, no, I think some of them obviously are.
But it must be funny because you think this is my life and you're making it look sort of, it's more polished on the screen.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely not as glamorous. And, you know, at 48 hours, there's nothing pretty about me anymore. You know, it's like my makeup's running, my hair's up in a ponytail, my suit is just, you know, in a disarray, and I smell like God knows what. But.
Well, you've been out on the streets. Hey, so you have to confront a lot of evil in your work. I mean, we can call this evil, can't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you have to go to the really darkest places to find answers sometimes.
Yes.
So where do you find the good? Where do you seek that balance with the good? Do you discover as much good as you do evil, or is it unfortunately not that balanced?
No, I think that I've been blessed in the fact that when I start to, you know, maybe feel a little down, I'll get some kind of grace or sign from mm-hmm. up above. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the hardest things that I've had to do is, and that people don't know, is that when I was going through trial with Stephen Gordon, you know, he's struggling with his faith. And one of the most difficult things I had to do and really tested my faith is when he was, you know, asking me questions, I told him, I said, I will pray for you, Stephen, mm-hmm. that you find the courage one day to ask our Maker for forgiveness for what you have done. And you saw this serial killer that has not displayed any emotion start to cry. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm evil and I deserve to die.
Wow.
And he looked at me for confirmation.
Is this during the interrogation?
No, this was during his trial.
Because
he would want to have meetings with me pretty much daily. He wanted to just have a conversation with me before court would start.
Kind of his touchstone.
A part therapist, I guess. Mm-hmm. The deputies call me the serial killer whisperer, which not a title I want to have.
Well, you know what you see maybe is their desire to be good, even though it seems to be out of reach for them. And I sort of wonder if that's like a pure possession of an evil force, you know, of Satan possessing them.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when just being around him, you feel it. You feel the evil in him, and then every once in a while you would get a glimpse of what little humanity is left in him. But talk about testing your fate. And I did. I did go and I prayed for him. And
well, I think these criminals need your rosaries too.
Well, you talk about the uniqueness of that ministry that you've been called to.
Well, imagine the gift that this woman has to be able to sit down across the table from them for 13 hours and befriend them. I mean, you were the good cop. Did you have a bad cop next to you?
No. I always interview alone. I think
if
you're going to tell a secret, it's easier to tell it to one person rather than two.
So they bring in the meals and the snacks and anything?
Yes.
And are people watching you the whole time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
There's always someone making sure that I'm okay because, you know, I don't take a gun in. I dress just like this and I'm just their friend. I let them call me by my first name, and it's just a conversation.
Wow. Well, you know, Julissa, honestly, this conversation has really moved me. I am incredibly impressed and inspired and honored by your company today. And I think it's really fitting on Memorial Day that we've brought Julissa in because she is risking her life for ours. And you have watched so many of your fellow officers risk their lives and sometimes lose their lives. And so we just pray that St. Michael continues to sit on your shoulder and our Blessed Mother continues to console you with those rosaries and console the victims. And I, you know, share some with some of those murderers. They might come around. You know, there's a lot of death row conversions.
I can see that.
Yeah.
And, you know, good for them if they're able to finally, you know, reflect on what they've done and ask for forgiveness.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you so much. And God keep you in your work. And
thank you.
City of Anaheim, you have found yourself a treasure here. So thank you. And I hope you come visit us again. And not too soon, though. I don't want you to have too many other serious crimes that we have to pursue. Hey, thanks for joining us today. I want to wish everybody a happy Memorial Day weekend. God bless you all. Join us again next week. Join our Facebook page, too. I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.